and welcome to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. This is Dave Jeffrey with you once again, all on my own some today, missing our two lovely readers, Virginia Collins and Lynn Perrott. Normally, we're all together in the one studio, but of course, due to isolation, we just cannot do that at the moment. Ladies, missing you greatly. I did not realise just how much work you do until you weren't here. Now, Optimal Life, it's a program looking at that great time in our lives when we work less and look forward to those wonderful golden years of retirement. In today's program, we're going to check out an Alzheimer's test. It's getting closer. And how your posture affects your performance. On the money side, superannuation funds. They're not as good as they used to be, but they're probably still the best. First up today, it's a look at a possible test for Alzheimer's. This article is taken from the Australian newspaper on the 30th of July, written by Natasha Robinson, the health editor. A simple blood test to detect Alzheimer's disease? Well, it's one step closer. This comes after scientists accurately predicted the presence of a neurodegenerative disorder in the brain. Now, sufferers of Alzheimer's have this. They predicted it by measuring concentrations of a protein biomarker in the blood. This research has excited neuroscientists around the world. They now believe a blood test to detect Alzheimer's disease could be widely available within 2 years. Three separate studies reporting on advances in blood tests that detect abnormal versions of a form of protein in the blood, called tau protein, that's spelled T-A-U, these were presented to the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference in Chicago recently. One of the studies indicated that a blood test could detect changes in the brains of people who go on to develop Alzheimer's disease. They hope that it could be detected 20 years before the onset of symptoms. Currently, methods used to diagnose Alzheimer's disease are costly and invasive. They include imaging techniques, the use of radioactive substances called PET PET scans. They also collect fluid from the spines of patients. But in the studies presented in Chicago, blood tests were almost an accurate and existing diagnostic method. All patients studied showed this. The studies focused on the presence of a specific form of tau protein known as p-tau217. It measured the presence of protein in the blood. Oscar Hansen, a researcher from the Lund University who was the lead author of the paper, said, "This test, once verified and confirmed, opens the possibility of early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. This can happen before dementia stage sets in. It's very important for clinical trials evaluating novel therapies that they might stop or slow down the disease." Stephen Robinson, research professor of the School of Health Sciences at RMIT University and director of the Brain Foundation Victoria, explained that the tangles from inside the neutrons in the brain are Alzheimer's patients lead to the death of brain cells. Tau protein is a major component of these tangles. He said, "It is going to enable more rapid screening of people suspected of having Alzheimer's disease, and it will hasten diagnosis. It should be fairly straightforward to commercialise this test." He said, "I would imagine that it may be available within 2 years. And we have groups of drugs that we know can slow down the progress of Alzheimer's disease. So those patients can be candidates for that treatment. The earlier they can be treated, the better." Maria Carrillo, the chief science officer of the Global Alzheimer's Association, said clinical trials were now being undertaken to test the accuracy of blood tests in larger populations. Dr. Carrillo went on to say, "The possibility of early detection and being able to intervene with a treatment before significant damage to the brain from Alzheimer's disease would be game-changing for individuals, families, and our health system." Well, a very positive article there. Hopefully, Alzheimer's early detection within 2 years. This is Optimal Life on the RPH Network. We are now going from health to money. Superfund's return is likely to be lower for longer. This is from the Australian Super and Investment section, written by John Collett. Superfund's members need to lower their expectations of any repeat of the strong growth seen in their past savings. This happened over the past decade. Industry analysts warn it will not be quite so good. Actuaries Rice Warner has warned members to expect average annual compound returns of just 5%. That will continue over the next decade, they say. This is rather than the 7 to 8% which we've become too accustomed to recently. However, that forecast was made before COVID-19 pandemic struck. And now, even that revised lower return is looking over-optimistic. Superfund members are long accustomed to bumper returns. Some funds doing even better than returning 7 to 8% a year. Figures from the Industry Watcher, it's called Super Ratings, figures here show that not-for-profit funds dominate the long-term performance league tables. The top 10 balanced investments over 10 years from June the 30th were all not-for-profit funds. They produced returns of at least 8%. Australian Super's balanced option was a number one that period, and it had an average of 8.8% a year. Balanced options have about half their members' retirement savings invested in Australia and global shares. A sizeable slice of the good performance has come from a staggering recovery on global share markets. This was after setbacks experienced during the global financial crisis. Not-for-profit funds have also significant allocations to unlisted assets. These are such things as infrastructure. It's good pay income. It helps smooth out long-term returns. As share markets around the world peaked last year, Rice Warner said funds should review their long-term target returns. They should look to a view to slashing estimates. Rice Warner Chief Executive Andrew Boll and consultant Richard Dunn are now urging even more cautious. They said coronavirus pandemic plunges global economies into the worst downturn since the 1930s. Remember, that was the Great Depression. They said that funds provide target returns for their options over the longer term, which is expressed as the likely return above the inflation rate. Researchers say the typical return target of My Super Investment Options, the balanced style where most members have to invest their retirement savings, is an average annual compound return of about 3.6% above inflation. However, there is a big variation in fund targets, they say, and some appear to be very optimistic. As underlying inflation is less than 2% a year, the targets imply that funds will need to earn 5 to 6% a year to achieve some of their targets. Now, they give an example. They say 10-year bonds now yield 1.1%, and equity markets usually have dismal performance during recessions. So, where will these high returns be made, they ask? Gross returns are only one side of the equation for super funds, as it is really net of fees that matter most. The expected lower investment returns could be cushioned by lower fees. Most funds contract external fund managers to invest members' money. However, a spate of super fund managers to provide more scale and spread fixed costs across a greater number of members is expected to be of major benefit. Scale also makes available more opportunity to bring some of the funds management in-house. This is in order to save on investment management fees. Well, that was a somewhat long-winded article, I guess, and a little bit technical, but I thought we'd read it because investment is probably still the best thing for us to invest our money in. Your posture can affect your performance. This is from the Daily Telegraph. On the 30th of July, strike a pose for success. If you are slouching while you're listening to this, well, shoulders back and listen up. Physiotherapists now believe that there is no such thing as the perfect posture. This is when it comes to averting back and shoulder pain. But there is emerging evidence that suggests the way we sit and stand can dramatically affect our mood and our self-confidence. Scientists investigating the psychology of posture say it is a small change in the way we carry ourselves, as opposed to the elaborate gestures of so-called power posing. This is things like leaning forward, arms out, or hands on hips. Think of Donald Trump. These are the things that are most effective in making us feel confident. A British researcher named Poppy Brown at the University of Oxford, studying psychiatry, conducted a range of studies. She concluded the way we sit, stand, and walk has a significant bearing on how we feel, how well we perform, and how others perceive us. She said what is important for raising confidence is not holding expansive power poses. Rather, it is avoiding the small contractive postures. These are things such as crossing your hands, rounding your shoulders. These all seem to reduce our self-belief. Well, there we are. Don't adopt power poses. Think the other way. And it says, don't cross your hands or round your shoulders. Think of Donald Trump, she said. Okay, we're going to talk about the golden years and then in a little while, mortgages. Things are changing. This item is entitled Make the Most of the Golden Years, and it's taken from the Good Life section of a recent Sydney Daily Telegraph. With retirement opening up new opportunities to enjoy life, the choice of where we go is the first crucial step. And it says, what we've got here in Australia is not so much downsizing, but down aging. This is why individuals are active later in life and happier in their empty nest home, much later than previous retirees were. A little bit of forethought goes a long way. That's when it comes to deciding where you will live as you grow older. Diana Mills of Rethink Retirement says, most people spend more time planning their two-week holiday than their retirement. One in five Australians is now 60 or over, and while they're now working longer than ever, the corresponding rise in life expectancy means even the youngest crop of baby boomers are now heading into their 50s. They may have more than 30 years of retirement ahead of them. Retirement has become less of a winding down and more of a transition to a brand new life stage. This is something that's unfettered by restrictions of work and, if you choose, family commitments. Mills says, today's baby boomers are not retiring from something, they're retiring to something else. With health and superannuation behind them, they're looking to make the most of everything that retirement offers. Nowhere is that more obvious than in their choices of accommodation. But how do you decide? Well, here are some questions to consider. And they've got six questions here, I think. It says, what do you want to do? How far away do you want to go? Is it time to downsize? Should you live with the family? Should you stay or should you go? All right, let's look at the first question. What do you want to do? If you are one of the increasing number of Australians over 65 who plan to keep working in retirement, how you plan to spend your time should be the first factor that determines where you end up living. What you want to do is inextricably entwined with where you want to live. You cannot answer these separately. Don't forget to consider other non-negotiable issues too. Is being close to the family a priority? Do you need to be close to a hospital or other health facilities? Do you plan to travel and, so, do you need to be close to an airport? Once you have the basics sorted out, you can work out what comes next. Okay, the next question, how far away do you want to go? It used to be that when people retired, they moved to an aged care facility or a retirement village close to home. Well, this is apparently not so anymore. According to the author and social researcher Mark McCrindle, while about a quarter of retirees opt to live within 5 kilometres of their previous home, increasingly people are opting to live further afield. This can make a sea change or a tree change to coastal or regional areas, or even interstate, which apparently about 16% of people do. Some people are lured by romantic notions of a perpetual holiday. But for 1 in 5, this is a financial decision. Property prices are forcing them to move away further than they would like, he says. Well, you still can't decide? When finances allow, Mills says an increasing number of retirees are becoming splitters. That is, downsizing their family home in favour of 2 smaller homes. One in the city, close to the family and friends, and the other outside of the city. This divides time between the two. All right, next question. Is it time to downsize? Offering like-minded communities and a smorgasbord of facilities, retirement villages are big business. Rightly so. This is particularly if you want a low-maintenance lifestyle or anticipate needing a higher level of care. But these are not the only option. Increasingly, older Australians are opting to downsize their home once they become empty nesters. They're swapping their large family home for a smaller, low-maintenance townhouse. Maybe an apartment. This frees up some capital. This capital can then be used to boost their retirement income. It can keep a reserve in case extra care is needed down the track. If you don't want to leave your home just yet, consider renting out the family home instead. Use the rental cash flow to rent somewhere in your desired area. Next question. Should you live with the family? With the price of real estate, particularly in places like Sydney, it's no surprise to learn the number of multi-generational homes is on the rise. This is when young adults and families move in with their parents to save costs. For some, the benefits are practical as well as financial. Adult children contribute to the mortgage as well as helping with day-to-day matters. These are things like shopping, housework, household maintenance. McCrindle says, often the time adult children move in coincides with the time their parents start having difficulties maintaining their properties. For others, the benefits are social, as baby boomers look to reconnect with family, or they might prefer to take on a caring role for their grandchildren. And the final question, do you stay or do you go? Despite its popularity, one option rarely discussed for older Australians is the idea of ageing in place. That is, staying right where you are now. Empty nesters are staying in their own homes longer than ever before. A recent National Seniors survey found almost 2/3 of Australians over 50 intend to stay in their current home as they age. That number increases to more than 80% for respondents over 75. What we've got now in Australia is not so much downsizing, but downaging. Individuals are happy and active in their empty nest home much later than previous retirees were. The benefits of staying put are obviously you're familiar with the home and the surrounding area. There's an emotional attachment in the proximity to friends and family, just to name a few things. But, with government at-home service stretched to their limit, retirees need to assess whether it's something they can afford. Well, I guess there's a huge amount of us in that category. We're approaching retirement, or maybe we're even there. What do we do? How do we handle it? Do we stay? Do we go? Lots of decisions. I hope that helped. And the other thing, we've read a little bit about this in previous programs, do not be afraid to ask for help for the government. Start doing it now. My Aged Care is a classic one. Particularly if you're staying at home, you might need some adjustments, etc. Get on the list now. Okay, hope I don't sound threatening. You're with the RPH Network. This is Optimal Life, produced in the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. We're going to stay in the retirement vein, I suppose, a little, and look at superannuation and what's the best way to go. It says here, Superfund returns are likely to be lower for longer. This is taken from the Sydney Morning Herald, written by John Collett. Now, it starts off with a very sobering message. Superannuation fund members need to lower their expectations of any repeat of the strong growth seen in their retirement savings over the past decade. So, lower your expectations. It's not going to be that good. Actuaries Rice Warner has warned members to expect average annual compound returns of just 5%. That is, over the next decade, i.e. the next 10 years. This is rather than 7 to 8%, which we've become used to. However, that forecast was made before COVID-19 pandemic struck. Now, the return is looking even worse. Superfund members are long accustomed to bumper returns, some funds doing even better than returning 7 to 8% a year. Figures from industry watchdog SuperRatings show not-for-profit funds dominate the long-term performance league tables. The top 10 balanced investment options over 10 years to June 30 were all not-for-profit funds. These produced returns of at least 8%. Australian Super's balanced option was number one over that period. It had an annual average return of 8.8%. Balanced options have about half their members' retirement savings invested in Australia and global shares. A sizeable slice of good performance has come from a staggering recovery on global share markets. This is after the setbacks experienced during the global financial crisis. Not-for-profit funds have also significant allocations to unlisted assets. These are things like infrastructure that pay good income. This helps smooths out the long-term returns. As share markets around the world peaked last year, Rice Warner said funds should review their long-term target returns. They should look to this with a view to slashing estimates. Their chief executive, Andrew Boll, and consultant Richard Dunn are now forging even more caution. This is as the coronavirus pandemic plunges world economies into the worst downturn. This is the worst downturn since the 1930s Great Depression. Funds provide target returns for their options over the long term. It's expressed as the likely return above the inflation rate. As underlying inflation is less than 2% a year, the targets imply that funds will need to earn 5 to 6% a year to achieve some of their targets. For example, 10-year bonds now yield 1.1%. Equity markets usually have dismal performances during recessions, so where will their higher returns be made? The article goes on to say gross returns are only one side of the equation for Superfund members. It is returns net of fees that matters most. The expected lower investment returns could be cushioned by lower fees. Most funds contract external fund managers to invest members' money. However, a spate of super fund mergers to provide more scale and spread fixed costs across a greater number of members is expected to be of major benefits. Scale also makes available more opportunities to bring some of the fund's management in-house. This will save on investment management fees. Perhaps a little technical, that article, but it's saying Superfund returns are likely to be lower, but they're probably still the best bet. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. We would just like to touch for a moment on the subject of legal issues. As we get older, look, I think we all know this, it is harder to keep up with technology, legal matters, and everything else. Elder abuse is one legal thing that's a big problem. We mentioned this before. Elder abuse does not just mean violence. It can be abuse of your money, abuse of your will, abuse of your property. And again, it's not just strangers and outside. It can be from within your own family. Seniors' Rights look after this. They have advocacy. They look after special needs groups. give them a call. Now you can either just simply type into the net seniors' rights, up it comes, follow it there, or give them a ring, 1-800-424-079. They are great friends of this program. Seniors' rights, literally for all your legal needs. That number again, 1-800-424-079. Got it? 1-800-424-079. Or if you're on the net, simply type in seniorsrightsservice.org.au. They're wonderful, helpful people. And it is worthwhile adding here that they'll certainly give you free advice, and in many cases they can give you free help as well. Well, that's about all we've got time for in our program today. Now, if you would like to know any more or have any queries about anything you've heard on the program today, we keep all material, so give me a call here, Sydney, 02-9518-8811. And, of course, if you've got any special requests or inclusions, we'd love to know what you prefer in the program, any more or any less of any subject at all. Thank you very much for being with me today. This is Dave Jeffrey saying bye for now. Look forward to your company again soon.